So as you know, our hope for today and tomorrow is to talk a little bit about the topic of the impact of civil marriage and also of Jewish marriage that are not necessarily carried out al pi halacha, and whether or not they are binding. And that topic is relevant for a lot of reasons. It has huge ramifications la halacha. The least relevant is the one we spoke about last week, because that's not such a common scenario. Yeah, last week we talked about that episode where you had a couple that thought they were getting married, Kedasu Kedin, and it turns out the ring was not actually the possession of the chassan. It was not the property of the chassan, and they ended up in this crazy situation where it's Friday night, Shabbat Brachos, and they may not technically be married. So then the question came up, were any of the other routes available to them, or had they already happened? And the question of Bia as Kedushin was relevant to that topic. But that's a crazy scenario that doesn't really happen too often. But what does happen infinitely more times is the reality of Jewish people who get married without proper Kedushin. And they could do so either knowingly, either because they're not interested in Kedushin and are getting married in a civil ceremony only, or they could do so less knowingly, meaning they are getting married by a rabbi in a Jewish ceremony, but the ceremony might not fulfill all the details that are crucial, that are maki of this process, and therefore the question comes up for them too. And the major relevance to the question usually comes up after the fact, usually comes up not necessarily just as to whether the couple is living in sin or not, as much of an issue as that is, and don't want to minimize that. In fact, the attitude towards that is very much at the crux of this whole discussion. But the issue that really is the most relevant and the most serious has to do with the marriage after this. That if this marriage would end, and then the wife would go on to another relationship, so depends when the question is being asked. If she wants to now remarry Kedasu Kedin, does she require a get from the first husband? And what happens if that is not easily obtainable? And if she went ahead with a second marriage or a second relationship with the similar type and had children from the second type, the second relationship, is there a concern of mamzerus that applies to that child? So these are all serious issues, probably each one a little bit of a different shade of severity and a little bit of a different zone in terms of what attitude can be taken. Mamzerus being the attitude where you're really in the most bidyevid situation because you already have a child that's born, you need to figure out what the status is, while the situation of getting remarried is a little bit different. On the one hand, there's a little bit more room to be machmir because maybe it hasn't happened yet, so you could still address something. You know, on the other hand, you're dealing with an impending avera of very, very significant Yehari Vayavor kind of stature, so that also adds a different dimension. And like you said, the first situation, the question of how is the couple categorized during that first marriage, so that's actually from a halachic priority plane, the lowest priority, but it's not nothing. And so, for example, you have a couple that becomes religious in the middle of their marriage and then wants to make sure they're living appropriately according to halacha. So then the question of whether that couple should go through marriage again, have another procedure of kedushin, is also relevant, you know, on a little bit of a different plane. So all of these are very, very important issues, much more relevant than the unique, strange situation we spoke about last week. No.
Is the reason we care more about the woman because all of them, I guess, and then have multiple wives? Or
yeah, absolutely, but that's the other half of it, right? The fact that they can, I think we spoke about this some earlier in the year, right? So it's true that the man Alpi Din Torah can have multiple wives, but that probably is relevant to the other fact, which is the bigger deal, that if a married woman has a relationship with another man, so that's what we call ishus ish, that's what comes with all the chumra of gilui arayos and mamzerus and isurim on the couple that goes from here on in, all those very serious consequences. While if the man who's married to a woman has a relationship with another woman, so it doesn't carry those stigmas. It doesn't carry the stigma of mamzerus. It doesn't carry the stigma of eishes ish if the woman is single, and the like. So it is a big difference from that perspective. I feel it's important to emphasize when you say this, because I don't want anyone to get the wrong idea. So I feel it's kind of a side point, but it's so important that it really should be emphasized here, that sometimes people say that, oh, in Orthodox Judaism, if the woman has an affair, that's terrible, has all kinds of horrible consequences, and if the man has an affair, that's okay. So, chas v'shalom. That is not true at all, and that's a very big misconception. So maybe we should take a minute here to emphasize why that is, that if a married individual of either gender has an affair, so that is a terrible aveira, it's a terrible transgression, and it has two elements to it. So one element is in the realm of Evan Ezer, in the realm of Ishus, where there is this aspect of Mamzerus, of Gilearayus, and the like. The second is that it is an enormous, enormous aveira, bin Odom Lachaveira. Right? That here, this is a betrayal of the person closest to you. And especially if you think about a point that we've mentioned a little bit recently, that the mitzvah to love your spouse is really the same mitzvah that one has to love everyone else. It's the mitzvah of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha, just in its most acute form. That's what comes out from the Gemara in the beginning of the second parak. So that being the case, so what's known in English as cheating on one's spouse, with all the connotations that come with that, so certainly one would not want to be the victim of that. So to do that to their own spouse is not only a violation of Yahavta L'Recha Kamocha in a really literal sense, but it's the most acute, most powerful kind of betrayal of that. And that is an avera she'ein l'shar. It's an avera of tremendous, tremendous consequence, ben adam l'chavero, and destroys families, destroys individuals, and has a phenomenal impact on people's entire life view. And in that case, we're not distinguishing between whether it's the wife who has the affair or it's the man who has the affair. In that realm, it applies in both directions with really equal consequence. So this is something which cannot be understated, which should not be understated, that just because the consequences of Mamzerus and Eishes Ish and the like do not attach to a man having an affair with a non-married woman, the Aveira ben Adam Chavero is very powerfully there. And maybe this is something also to emphasize. I think we discussed a little bit recently, whether it's in this context or a different context, the question of when there's a cherim, we find whether it's cherim of Beinu Gershom, or it's a cherim of Kadmonim, or it's a cherim of anybody else. So the question is often discussed, does that mean that, oh, this is a new Issur D'Rabbanan, and before this it was Mutter? Or do we not draw that inference, and it could be or maybe is the case that this act was always Asur, but it was something that people didn't take seriously enough, and therefore the rabbinate of the time had to make a bigger statement, and that's what becomes a cherim. So you find both views expressed, and it probably depends what case we're talking about, but the question always comes up, well, Rabbi, how could you say that a cherim represents something that was prohibited before, when we say marrying two wives is an issur cherim d'Rabbeinu Gershom, and clearly that was mutter before, and Yaakov Avinu had multiple wives, and Avram, we'll read this parsha, it's actually a little synergy, it'll come up in Shishi, this week's parsha, Avram's multiple wives, so clearly there is such a thing, and it's clearly mutter min haTorah, so this must conclusively settle the point that a cherim is not necessarily a previous prohibition. Here maybe a cherim could be something that's mutter. So I don't know if this is really a proof. I think it's not a proof, because I think that, yes, in the area of Evan HaEzer, in the area of Gilear Arayos, so yes, it's conceivable for a man to have more than one wife and more than one relationship. But in the area of Ben Adam L'Chavero, when you have an expectation that marriage is a one-on-one relationship like it is today, like it is in our Jewish society, and like it is in the broader society in which we find ourselves, so then it's an enormous transgression, really enormous beyond the scale, transgression ben adam l'chaveiro, for a man to have an affair. And therefore, presumably, that's what Rabbeinu Gershom is responding to. He's saying that, yes, you might not take this so seriously because theoretically, in the Torah, there's a model of a man having more than one wife. But already in his time, for a man to have another relationship outside of his existing marriage is a disgraceful ben adam l'chaveiro violation. And therefore, the cheirim, which could vary depending on the context, it could be there were environments in which that wasn't the expectation, but already in his time, then certainly in our time, that's the expectation. So therefore, yes, a cheirim there is essentially just solidifying the isser that was already there. And to illustrate this point also, you could see the story of David HaMelech and Bathsheba. So we know there's a machlokus in the Gemara, in Masechet Shabbos, about whether David sinned with Bathsheba. And there, the Nakudas HaMachlokas in the Gemara, what the issue revolves around, is the question of, was she divorced? Why would she have been divorced? Because maybe when the husbands went out to war, maybe they wrote a get to their wives just in case they should end up missing in war and they shouldn't leave their wives as agunos. So therefore, it's possible that she was divorced and she wasn't actually an Ashes-ish. So that Gemara, which hangs that whole issue on that issue, on that point, is essentially addressing Ebenezer Shabbat, is addressing the Gili Arayas. Was she halachically an Eishes Ish? But we know from the Navi that there was another level to it, that the issue could be considered in two different realms. Right? Because we know that David HaMelech eventually acknowledges, Chatosi, he acknowledges that he did sin. Right? So is that a contradiction to this whole discussion of the Gemara? So not necessarily, because then the Gemara is talking about it from the Ebenezer perspective. But if you look in the Navi, so Nasan HaNavi comes, and he tells David HaMelech the Tol Mashal, right? You're familiar with the story, and David HaMelech eventually comes to understand, if it's being pointed out to him, that he is the subject of the Mashal, and that the Kibbutz HaRash, the story of a man who has many sheep, and there's another man who has only one sheep, he's a poor man, and the rich man takes the single sheep from this poor individual. So what's the whole point of the story? Gili Arayas? Well, the point of the story is Ebenezer, the point of the story was that you did the terrible ben adam l'chaveiro of depriving this man of his wife. So that duality there, the discussion of the Gemara and the way the story is presented in the Navi, shows us two different tracks. There's the Ebenezer level, and there is the Ben Adam L'Chaveiro level, and Nasan HaNavi was telling Navi that whatever the Ebenezer is here, the fact is there was a terrible Aver of Ben Adam L'Chaveiro, and ultimately he comes to acknowledge that. So I think that that's what's here as well. And all of the technical discussions that we have that focus more on the wife than on the husband should not, chas v'shalom, lead anyone to the conclusion that there is any leniency or that there's any kalkite to be associated with a man having an affair with an unmarried woman. That would be a terrible betrayal, which is an aveira of ben adam l'chaveiro of tremendous consequence. Is that clear? Make sense? No?
Do you think that I guess the way that Navi and the Gemara tackle the issue, do you think that's reflective of like the goals of what both Tanakh and Gemara respectively?
Maybe that's a broader question. Could be. But I think, you know, there's two tracks here, whatever. I think you can find proofs in both sources in the other direction. But I think it's an interesting question to ask in a different setting. But I think really what emerges from there is that there's two different tracks on which to have this conversation. So for a lot of this Masechta, a lot of what we talk about this year, and also the Ksubas here, a lot of what we talk about, if we learn Gittin, focuses on one track of that conversation, but we shouldn't forget that the other track is very, very crucial and very, very real, and that's true here as well. So we're talking about this issue of this next 2 days. So yes, the question of whether the woman is married is going to be a much more significant question for ramifications like Manzeris and the like, but one should not, chas v'shalom, interpret from that focus that there's any lack of severity directed towards a married man and relationships that he might have. I should also mention, just to illustrate this particular question, to illustrate how we sometimes talk on different tracks, I remember many years ago, it's probably already 20 years ago or so or more, there was an article in the New York Times that a woman wrote talking about this horrible experience that she had with Orthodox Judaism. Because she was not religious, and she had a younger sister who became religious. And the younger sister got engaged to, I think it was a Hasidic man, and they were about to get married, and then there was a snag that the Hasidic chassan found out that this sister was really her half-sister, that the mother had been remarried. The mother, the author of this article, was a child of the same mother, and then that mother became divorced from the first husband and married another man and had this younger sister. So because this younger sister was the product of the second marriage, so there was a concern of Mamzerus, there was a concern that since there was no get, there was not a religious couple, since there was no get from the first marriage, so this chassan was hesitating to marry the newly religious younger sister, and it was a whole crisis until they asked the rabbi and the whole thing, and then they went through everything, and it turned out that since the first marriage was not the halachic marriage, so there was a ruling that there wasn't a need for a get, and there was no mamzerus issue, and the younger sister was okay, and she married her Hasidic chassan, and Shalom al Yisrael. But not really Shalom al Yisrael, because the author of this article was saying that she was terribly offended by this whole process, and indeed, there are other reasons why this whole discussion can end up coming across as offensive, and it's a difficult issue already, because here what we're saying is that the position that one does not need to get from such a marriage is a kula, because it saves Eishes Ish and Mamzerus and the like, but it's also one that can come across as very offensive, because it's declaring the first marriage as invalid, and that casts aspersions on Sadr Kedushin, if there was one, it casts aspersions on the couple, and the whole status of the first marriage, and the like, and perhaps the children from the first marriage on some level. That's what the author of the article ended up saying, that this was a terrible thing, she thought, because in order to save her younger sister from illegitimacy, they declared her illegitimate. And because they said that her parents weren't married to each other, so the ramification is that she's illegitimate. So the truth is, she's mixing systems here, right? Because she's talking about the colloquial usage of the term illegitimacy, which we use to refer to children of parents who aren't married. Although halachically, it doesn't have that stigma, paradoxically. It's interesting, it's a greater stigma in secular culture than it is in religious culture. But halachically, it doesn't have that stigma, because the real stigma comes from not when the parents are not married to each other, but it's when one is married to someone else, or when there's another other issue. So we'd rather say that the parents weren't married at all than say that the mother was married to somebody else. So that's what, from a Mamzerus perspective, we're not so focused on whether they're married to each other or not. That she's talking about illegitimacy in a different sense. So yes, the halachic disqualification of her parents' marriage, she felt that he had brought a taint of illegitimacy, while at the same time he was saving her sister from halachic illegitimacy. So essentially, this also reflects how we're drawing on different languages here, and there's different terminology, and there is a mixture of different systems and cultures coming here, and you have to be aware of that also, and that's why this sugya, which has a certain very technical focus to it, also can come across as quite offensive on a lot of different levels, and something to be sensitive to and aware of just how these parts come together. Okay? So far, so good? Okay, so now, again, so let's try to lay down the basic principles. And I also want to make it clear that this sugya is very important on a lot of different levels. Very important, like I said, because it has tremendous, tremendous practical ramifications, tremendous nafkaminas lahalacha. But here, in our context as a Gemara Shir, it has a lot of relevance to our understanding our sugyas. Because, yes, we're on the cusp of starting the sugya of Kedushei Bia, so it has tremendous relevance for just understanding that sugya. But beyond that, as maybe you'll see in the next few minutes, I'll try to lay this part out today, it actually goes to the lomdusha conceptual core of the entire mesechta, or of the entire framework of everything we've been doing so far. So let's try to spend a few minutes now for today trying to understand why that is. So what are the central questions? Okay, here, if we want to consider the issue, knowing that Kedusha Bia exists, so we want to consider the question, if you have a couple that is not married halachic, that does not have a halachically valid chuppah ceremony, and again, either because they didn't go that route at all, they went through a civil route, or because there was some flaw in the process, even though there was a Jewish wedding. So should Kedusha Bia kick in? What would you say are the core issues here? What are the core questions? No.
Das. Is it
okay?
Have das when they have, yeah.
Okay, so that is certainly one of the major ones, right? So we know that Kedusha Bia exists. So therefore, since the relationship presumably is physical at least, even if it's nothing else, so what is the das? Is when the physical relationship takes place, does that happen with the requisite das for kedushin? Since das is necessary, so is that happening? What else? What other relevant questions come up? What else might be the issue?
In terms of counting a slow marriage.
Yeah.
Aiden.
Aiden. Okay. So we know that for a marriage to be valid, it has to have aiden. So where are the aiden going to show up here? Right.
Oh, this might be similar to Marlo's saying about a das, but also what das you are having, like
you're not answering the Aiden question. You're just
Okay,
sorry. So let's put the Aiden question for a second to aside.
That's
okay.
I thought
so
he said,
okay, so no, so we talked about das first. So continue on das.
Well, that what's it called? Like what your das is, like where your das is, like if it's on the, if you think that a ceremony was kedushin, will that affect how bia work?
Okay, so where your das is, okay, I thought you were going to go in a different direction,
yeah.
Okay, that's true also, Jonah?
So two different things about the das, is it that just Aiden need to know, or you need to know, or does everyone need to be informed?
Okay.
And then,
which is similar, you know, combining the issues of the Aiden and the Das. Right? So just parenthetically, if we're worried about Aiden, which clearly Aiden is an issue, as we've mentioned throughout the year, so where do the Aiden show up here? We presumably are not dealing with people who actually have Aiden
right.
In a physical active bia, right? So it comes from a more general knowledge, which is already interesting, right? And we'll see. We'll look at the Gemara together. You still have the Gemara in Gittin, but we'll look at it together, where the Gemara suggests that awareness of their cohabitation can count as Avis, which is a different type of Avis than we've seen so far. But, John, you finished your point? Did you go to yourself?
I can't remember.
Okay, so.
Does it have to be that they have to know that they're cohabiting, or could it just be the fact that, like, the Eidei Yehud, that they're in, but that they're together, secluded for a certain amount of time?
So when we say, Heng Heng Eidei Yehud, Heng Heng Eidei Bia, so as we'll see, we'll give a look at that Gemara together, so we're not really talking about what we call Yehud at the wedding. Right, so is that what you're asking?
No, I was just saying more of in terms of them being by themselves. Like, similar to what they do at the wedding, but the fact that they're by themselves and not that they know that they're cohabiting, they know that they're secluded.
Right, so I think the assumption is, when we talk about it, what we mean is not that the act of yichud is always presumed to be equal to the act of bia, but, because we know that's not true, but that essentially, when you have a couple that is known to be living together, and especially some of the shilas and shuvas that talk about this, talk specifically also when there is a child that's produced, but even without that, so then the assumption, when we really know that they're, just like we say also in secular parlance, this couple's living together, and that carries a scandalous or not, depending on what your culture is, a scandalous or non-scandalous implication, but the implication is in people's minds that they are having relations, so that's the point, that the It's a haunted room today. I guess it is scandalous. But the idea that the essential knowledge that everyone has that this is going on, even though they don't really witness it. Jed?
Similar to the way that the Bia doesn't really doesn't necessarily have the proper das,
mm-hmm.
can you say that, like, also there's going to maybe be a time when the husband gives his wife a gift, even though it's not taking place in the context of the wedding, or he's not saying Hariyav Yekdeshali, but he's still going to be giving her a gift at some point, with having in mind that, you know, I'm giving this to her because she's my wife, or, like, I'm giving her a birthday, whatever it is, one-year anniversary gift. So can we say that that can also, even though it might not have the proper das, the same way that Bia may or may not have that das, can we compare the two cases?
Okay, so it's an important question to ask just why those two cases are or aren't comparable. And that's definitely a conversation very worth having. On the surface, just, you know, as we're trying to get some introductory topics in here, why would you say those cases maybe aren't comparable? The giving of a gift and the physical relationship of a couple.
One's a much more direct way of possibly expressing that a couple is a couple.
Okay, and maybe more to it a little bit also. I assume you're saying that Bia is the more direct way, right? So there's more to that as well, right? What's going to be a central issue that the Poskim and the Gemara is going to really allude to, and the Poskim are going to get into in great length? What's a central issue that maybe distinguishes between the two? Maybe the first issue to really get into in detail? Well, there's the assumption that not only is Bia more typical of a married couple, but one of the things we're going to have to figure out is in what context. Sorry.
Does Bia even work?
Well, okay. But part of the question is one of the key issues that's going to come up, right? Is to what extent is it conceivable to us that Bia would take place outside of Kedushin, right? Because we'll look at the Gemara getting together in a second, right? But the key phrase there, Ein Adam Osa Bilaso Bilaz Nus, is going to be a major issue. So part of the premise is that Kiddushin, that the Bia happens only either in the context of Kiddushin or as Kiddushin, but not outside of it. Now, gift giving is presumably not on the same level. And so that's one major area in which they're going to be different from each other. And to also put a finer point on it, so what we'll see also is going to emerge is that we are assuming that we have to figure out if what the wedding wasn't a halachic wedding, so then should there be an assumption that there would be an effort to divert that to something else? Now, would that be true in the context of gifts between the couple, which happen in all kinds of other contexts? Probably to a different degree. To a significantly different degree. But it's an important question, and we'll see how that plays out. Now, we discussed a little bit the question last week, you know, the question of could there be other things happening during the wedding ceremony that could take on that context. So whether the shtar kedushin, if one's using the unusual method of kedusha shtar, or whether the ksuba could count as kedusha kesef. So maybe that's asking the question from a different angle, that in the context of the wedding itself, if there's something that doesn't end up taking the actual form of Kedusha Kesef, is there another route to it? So that question comes up. And what's going to be hugely relevant also, and maybe this puts your question in more of a direct context, is, so let's not ask about gifts the couple may give each other at their first anniversary, but what about gifts the couple gives during the wedding ceremony? And do such gifts rise to the level of Kesef Kedushin? Or conversely, does having the attitude that they are gifts undo Kesef Kedushin? What am I alluding to here? One of the major, major issues also in contemporary wedding assessment, marriage assessment, is the question of the very frequently found double ring ceremony. So when you have a chassan giving his wife a ring, right, which seems to fit what we're talking about as the process of Kiddushin, but he's getting a ring from her in exchange. So does that very act actually undo the Kess of Kiddushin, right? The fact that it's now seen as a gift rather than as a kinyan. Maybe even where you have what could otherwise be kinyan Kiddushin, now is less so because it's viewed as a gift between the couples rather than as kinyan Kiddushin. So the relationship between the two, as you're asking, could actually go in the other direction, and it's definitely something we need to try to figure out, and affects the question of civil ceremonies or of less halachic ceremonies. And this is something which comes up all the time. If there was a double ring ceremony, it comes up in aguna situations. And I've heard a lot of discussion about this recently, that if you have a situation where there's no get and the husband's not coming forward with one, but it was a double ring ceremony, is that enough reason to allow the woman to remarry? Yes or no?
Similar to the, I guess, question of das, would there be a problem if their das was specifically that the consummation of being would be for a different religious purpose, like for a different religion?
A different religion or a different religious purpose, two different questions. They may both be relevant, right? Because, A, the first question, different religious purpose, so yes, that might be relevant as far as taking something out of the realm of Kiddushin, but also a different religion by itself, as we'll see. See, by the way, so that was, we're almost going to run out of time, but one of the things I was going to do with you is, so I gave you the later tshuvas, as Makaris, I didn't give you the earlier tshuvas, so tshuvas harivash, for example, that everyone builds on, so I've given you the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah and Pasni based on that, and the later tshuvas that discuss it, but I didn't give you the tshuvas harivash itself to look at. I was going to go over it with you in the next few minutes, but maybe run out of time. Maybe I'll give you that for tomorrow morning to add to look at also. But one of the points that Shuvas HaRivash talks about is that question is what they're doing somehow reflective of a lack of interest in the Kiddushin process, and therefore that's going to affect things. Okay? But what else? So here's a very central question, which I think really affects our whole Masechta, not just the question of Kiddushin Bia. As we will see, when we get into the nitty-gritty more tomorrow, and as you struggle further with the tshuvas, so you'll see that ultimately the most well-known positions on this issue on two different ends of the spectrum are who? In the 20th century poskim? Rav Moshe and Rav Henkin, right? So Rav Henkin is the machmir in the sense of validating these marriages, and that comes out in Chumro as far as future marriages. And Rav Moshe is the big maker. Again, the author of the New York Times article would call him the machmir in terms of disqualifying her parents' marriage. But it comes out as a tremendous kula because of the very, very serious secondary issues. So Rav Moshe is the machmir, Rav Moshe is the maker, and Rav Henkin is the machmir. So here there's an issue between them that really goes to our whole masechta. Because essentially, to say it way too briefly, Rav Henkin feels that civil marriages have the weight of halachic kiddushin and require a get, and Rav Moshe feels they don't. What issue, without getting into any of the lumdus yet, or any of the details, but what issue really affects that whole question? Pretty basic, general issue. Again, it's a whole Masechta kind of question. No?
I was like happy.
Okay. We'll let you off the hook.
Yeah.
Jonah, yes?
What is the nature of Kiddushin?
Okay, so say better. What is the nature of Kiddushin anymore?
Is the idea that one just commits to living with a certain woman?
Mm-hmm.
And kind of this general das of living with her, or does there have to be a specifically Jewish, a more specific intent of living possibly and creating a Jewish marriage?
Okay, so that is very much the issue, right? And that's essentially a day one kind of issue from Maseches Kiddushin, right? That we have spoken about the fact, the Rambam and Hilchos Yishuv, Aleph Aleph, right? Kodem Matan Torah, there was a concept of Yishuv. And there was such an idea as being married, and we believe non-Jews statues of the concept of marriage also, and Eishes Ish is still one of the Arayos in the realm of Sheva Mitzvahs Chininot. So, once Kiddushin was Nishadesh to the Torah, so isn't our assumption that that means something completely new? Right, Reb Henkin's premise apparently is going to be that the desire of a couple to see themselves as married is enough to effect a halachic marriage. But it seems like, we have seen, that it shouldn't be enough, maybe by its very nature. You maybe almost have to say that, because marriage existed before the Torah. And marriage exists outside the Jewish people after the Torah. So, Bal Korcha, Kiddushin, is something new. So therefore, the idea that a couple desires to be married shouldn't necessarily be enough. We need to have the desire to have a Kiddushin. And if so, that is a very major premise for Reb Moshe's position. And it may theoretically, although not necessarily saying this is a conclusion, and it's not Reb Moshe's conclusion, but it may theoretically also draw a very big line between civil marriages on one side of the room and non-halachic Jewish marriages on the other side of the room. Right? Because it might be that when you have a civil or other religion marriage, so then, that is an act that has no connection to Kiddushin. So therefore, whatever they're doing, and yes, they see themselves as husband and wife, and everyone knows that, and they have children, and whatever it is, maybe still we haven't approached anything that connects us to the world of Kiddushin and Yid. But if there is a Jewish wedding, even if the Jewish wedding is flawed and is missing some components, you might still say that, okay, but this couple is trying to effect Kiddushin, and since Bia is a method of Kiddushin, then gets back to our last week concept, Kiddushin backup, right, that maybe this should indeed kick in as an alternate route. Okay, so far, any questions? So this, I think, is the major whole Masechta issue that is behind this discussion, right? That if we assume Kiddushin is a Chiddush, is a new mitzvah of the Torah, so then we have to figure out, is it going to be the case that Kiddushin Bia will kick in even though it's lacking in other regards? So, on top of that, and we'll just insert this into the conversation and we'll pick up from this tomorrow, so then we know that the Sugya in Gittin is really very much at the heart of this, and we'll just look at this together quickly. So the Mishnah says in Gittin, Hamagarish is Nisho of Alarim of Apuntaki, somebody who is in a hotel with his first wife, who has divorced his first wife, so Beishamir Ein Etzrichim and Get Sheni, but Beisilil Mitzrichim and Get Sheni. So Beisilil is worried that they are now remarried to each other, and Beishamai is not worried. He must have his mention of Skarshim and Nisuin. So this is assuming that they were actually fully married before. And if they weren't fully married, they only had Kiddushin, then they'll agree you don't actually need a get. So the Gemara asks, the machlokas must be in a situation where it was known that they actually had bia. The Beis Shammai Savri Adam Osa Bia, because then the question is, okay, so they had bia, we know that as a fact. So now, what is the status of that bia? So Beis Shammai Savri Adam Osa Bia Osa Bia Osnos. Beis Shammai says that bia still might be meaningless halachically. It could still be just an act of znos, and therefore should not be looked at as a marriage. But Beis Hillel Savri Ein Adam Osa Bia Osa Bia Osnos. And Beis Hillel says, no, we should assume that they wouldn't want to act that way, and therefore has halachic significance. But if there was no evidence of the bia, then there's no reason for a get. But if the Mishnah tells us the difference between whether they have been fully married before or not, because of this element of libo gospel, the familiarity, So if we saw that there actually was bias, a malam in the air, some other in the sword, so then we don't have to talk about nivul gaspo, we know that it happened, so it doesn't matter. So must be the Mishnah is Baruch Hashem situation where they were not still parts that anyone actually saw this happening. Rabbi Yochanan Damar ki haytana. Rabbi Yochanan's tradition is the time of Shimon and Elazar. Lo nechu b'sham b'silo al shalo nivu al shalo rosh nivu la shein shvi chum negeshen. On that situation, they don't have enough focus that you don't need to get. Aman nechu al shalo rosh nivu la b'sham yomrim ad mosu la silo. So one version of seeing this is the whole question: do you say ad mosu bilasu bilasnos or not? Well, masnis and daklim da b'lo rosh nivu la. Our mission is talking about where that was not seen. So that there was knowledge of their cohabitation, but there was no knowledge of the relationship. Beishamai's tradition is we don't assume that knowledge of the living together is enough. Or Beisil Sabri Amrina and Hain Hain Eidi Yichud and Hain Hain Eidi Bia Beisil that it is. A mode in the discussion in Eirishin, you certainly get shredded, can deal with Gashman and Rina, Hain Hain Eidi Bia. But we'll acknowledge that if they don't have this previous relationship, that knowledge is not enough to put it in that category. So what emerges from this Gemara, we'll just wrap up here, what emerges from this Gemara is a couple of key issues. Right? That if, do we assume that as far as the Eidus is concerned, since we know we need Eidus for a marriage, so is Eidus on just living together enough to constitute Eidus on the Bia? So that's one level of question. The Bia is whatever it is, but do we even know that it happened? Does the Eidus count? And then if we do know that it happened, and we'll say the Eidus does count, or even we'll say for whatever reason, we know that it happened, but is there a presumption that the Bia that happened has to be a non-Znus Bia? So now we're going to get into a major question. We'll really start with this issue tomorrow. What is that premised on? Does that assume a certain moral status? Does it assume a certain religious status? Is there a difference between moral status and religious status? Is there a difference between different types of averos? Many fascinating questions to ask. So we will, Be'ezus Hashem, pick up with this tomorrow. Who'd like to daven for us? Oh, okay. Okay, Morty, you want to daven for us? Okay, Ash.